to pick up where we left off at. Do we have any here today that weren't here yesterday morning? We do have a couple. We've started part one of what we are going to complete today. I felt we need to complete this on sonship today because there's just so many people here from so many states that I really want to speak on spiritual fathering, because the body of Christ has missed spiritual fathering. And it's not one I share very often because I'd be thrown out of the church if I shared it. But I feel like I can share it here. There's a few places I feel like I can share it. And I think Graham heard me share on it Friday. Is it safe here, Graham? All right. And so I'd really like to share it for the benefit of all the leaders that come from so many other churches, as well as for this church and the leaders in this church. And so we're going to finish up this thing as we taught on yesterday, the spirit of sonship. And just a 60-second review, we looked at the whole principle and shared some life experiences about how most people at one point or another, somewhere in their childhood or their youth, they made a decision to stop being their father or mother's son or daughter. Oh, they still lived at home. And we said, you can legally be a son and live in a home with a loving, caring father, yet choose not to receive the benefits of sonship. And what happens, the first thing that happens is you move into independence. You stop receiving them. And so we looked at that, and we found out the real basic problem was this whole thing of we lost basic trust. Because somehow our mother and father did something through their own hurts and pains for their youth, through disappointments, through the lack of understanding, whatever it may have been. We took it as offense, we took it as disappointment, and we lost basic trust. It may have been broken promises and our parents just not fulfilling promises. We lost trust in our basically, and when you lose trust, as soon as you lose trust, you move into independence. And so we looked at that. We moved into independence and isolation and self-reliance. And let me define this thing of basic trust. I realize I heard Kubis, a friend of mine from South Africa, give me a good definition of basic trust, and I want to share that with you. Basic trust does not mean the ability to believe one another, but it is the capacity to hold our heart open to each other, especially if we believe the other person's motives or intentions are not pure. It's not just the ability to believe another person, but basic trust is, repeated again, is the capacity to hold our heart open. But remember how we closed our heart in our teenage years? Those that have teenagers or had teenagers at one time, remember how they closed their heart to you. The heart is closed when they lose basic trust. And therefore, they lose the ability to receive us, or we lose the ability to receive them. Let me go a little bit further, and you can grab these notes on the break. We will take a break in about an hour. Basic trust is an open heart. Someone who risks being vulnerable, even when it hurts, to stay in openness. And he allows himself to be healed and does not run away. Basic trust is to open your heart even though it may hurt you. I was in a meeting, a ministry meeting, and a gathering of a few ministers in the area a year or so ago, and one of the ministers just could not agree with what I do. And in the middle of that meeting, he just took off on me. I mean, it was a very harsh attack. And it wounded me. But not for me. It wounded me for him. Because it revealed jealousy. Because of the success that we're going through right now and his lack of success. It revealed competition and rivalry. And I was so grieved that all I could do was just out of humility just plead for forgiveness for doing anything. Responded in brokenness and responded in vulnerability, and he never let up. When the meeting was over, nothing was resolved at that time, and everybody had their appointments. And we walked out the door, and my wife said, "How could you continually to humble yourself? He was completely in the wrong. You could tell it was such jealousy and competition. How could you keep your heart open to that person? It wasn't a one-time thing. It's been going on for 5 years. How do you continually honor this person?" Basic trust. To continually keep your heart open to somebody, no matter how much they may hurt you. That's what basic trust is. Awesome thing happened in the last few months. Came to me in total repentance. Total repentance. Brokenness. Repenting to the others. Because as I left my heart open to him, I became the safe place to where he finally was able to receive this message of the Father's love, and it's transformed him and his ministry. Basic trust is when you are able to receive love and nurture again, you're able to risk being childlike again, no matter how much that person may make mistakes, may misrepresent the Father's love. And see, it's this lack of basic trust that hinders us from receiving. It's this lack of basic trust that causes us to lose the spirit of sonship and come into this whole thing of the orphan spirit. And your house, your family, your ministry, your church will not be a safe place until it is founded upon basic trust. Because the world is looking for people that are real, open, transparent, and vulnerable. People they can trust failing with. And if we lack basic trust, people can't trust us. Because we move into what Francis Frangipane taught on years ago, cold love. A guarded heart. Now, what I'd like to do is I'd like to contrast. For those that weren't here yesterday, this is not a formal type nighttime meeting. I like being in a living room. I love small groups and living room environments and just opening up and sharing. We can't do questions and interaction. There's just too many people here. But I just like sharing like I would with a small group. And we're going to take a break somewhere around 11, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to end about 12 or somewhere around there and just have some ministry and God's love just come to us. And then we'll come back, those that can, for the workshops at 2. But what I wanted to do is I want to contrast these two issues in our life, the orphan spirit and the spirit of sonship. And if you can't keep up with the notes, I'll leave my notes around here afterwards, because I know there's ministers here and they're wanting material for Sunday. And and so if you are a minister, a pastor, I don't know that we can make copies of this for everybody, but we'll try to get you a few copies. But let's contrast this orphan spirit or the spirit of sonship. Now, we talked about living on center in Father's love. So you could also put under here off-center. Last night we talked about being in the center of Father's love. Or we can also put in here being on-center. Because that's really what it's all about. Every time you're in the center of Father's love, you're operating out of the spirit of sonship. But where we were at last night, every time you start drifting, you start taking on the orphan spirit. And isn't it easy to bounce back and forth? Oh, you live at my house. Okay, you live. It's easy to move back and forth. So let's contrast it. Now, the first thing we're going to contrast is the image we have of God. And you could put in here just the image of God. The image of God that orphans have is God as master. But the image that sons have of God is what?
Father.
Is God as father, not just any father. Not my father, thank goodness. Not yours either, probably. But we learned last night the prodigal father. Prodigal, meaning one who gives or spends in a reckless, extravagant way. One who gives love and compassion. Now let's look at the dependency system that they may have. Tell me, who's the orphan dependent on? Self. He's all wrapped up in gifts, power, anointing, talents. And you can be a powerful, powerful minister of the gospel, preaching eloquently, winning souls, flowing in the power, knocking them down, still have an orphan spirit. How do you know that, Jack? Oh, I've talked to the wife. They're kids who come to us for counseling. I mean, we're who the kids come to for counseling. And we said it Sunday, 80% of adult children of people in ministry will end up under psychiatric care for depression in the United States. 80%. Because so much of the identity is in the self-reliance and independence. But the dependency here is really, we know it's God, but I like a better word. Helplessness. Let me bring this down to how this operates in an orphan spirit. Growing up in an alcoholic home that ended in divorce when I was 18, but my father stopped speaking to my mother at 12 and moved into the furnace room and just lived in the same house for 6 years and never speaking to one another. It was just a disaster zone every day waiting to happen. No comfort, no rest. And when you're a small child and you grow up in that place, you have no control of anything going on. Your whole life is just hurt and wounded. And the pain that's about to explode through your chest because there just is no... I appreciate Larry just sitting right here for me. There's no safe place there. And somewhere about 11, 12, 13 years old... You just, I'll not hurt anymore. You stopped hurting. But what's that environment like for us at 6, 8, 10, 11 years old? What's it like? Helplessness. We're totally under the domination of the control of the circumstances and the pain and the fears and the insecurity. Even though my parents loved me, would have died for me, would have given their life for me, I was my mother's favorite child. But because of their own woundedness and pain from their own youth, it's what just can't come out. Now, because of that, we shared a little bit about it yesterday. I learned by 12 years old to whenever I felt helpless, to just go into num-numville. Whenever I couldn't control a situation, I stopped feeling, and then there's no pain. How many did that? Look around you, please. I'd like to do this because we think we're the only one. And it's usually 60, 70, 80% of us. And so years later, I didn't realize I have this habit structure of thinking inside of me, this stronghold inside of me, that whenever I feel like I can't do it right, because I learned in the teenage years, man, to take control. And then by 21 years old, I'm captaining fishing boats that are running 60 miles offshore, a week, 10 days, 12 days offshore, living out the perfect storm, fighting off the seas and the storm. And I learned independence. I learned to be strong. I was a helpless, couldn't do anything, didn't have control of my environment as a child. But when you put me on that fishing boat out at sea, I'm in control. Well, actually, the sea's in the control. You never defeat the sea. You just survive another day at sea. But I was one of the survivors out there. And once I got born again, I all that was gone, wasn't it? All the independence was gone. All the control was gone. And well, that's what some theology teaches. They taught me that in Bible school. I got it all when I got born again. And that's true. Your spirit man got it all. But God changes your heart, but we crucify our habits. I had this habit structure that whenever I couldn't change something, whenever I couldn't make it work, then I felt helpless, so I would go num-num-ville. We saw it. I never saw it until just this December. My wife and I have been planning for years for our 25th anniversary. And it was just such a blessing that our team and many others just wanted to surprise us. And they took an offering up for us. Never had anybody do anything like that. And we'd gone all out and didn't have the money, but just borrowed the money literally to do it. To get a 25th anniversary cruise and 7 days in the Caribbean on the finest ship in a suite. And just because we'd never been on a honeymoon and never had a real vacation. There's always kids or poverty and so many 15 years of poverty in ministry, you know. And so We head to the Keys for a week in the Keys, the Monday after Thanksgiving, and my wife had been going through some physical things through the change of life at 47 years old, and she'd been going through them since last January, and we had some crises, and I just never have been good around sickness. I've never been too good when things aren't going the way I want them to go. Oh, you too, huh? Why do you do this to me, Jack? Why do you just open your life up and rip my heart out at the same time? And the first day we get to the Keys, my wife just falls out on the floor having a seizure. And they just continue to come one after another every hour. And we didn't know what was going on in these physical seizures. And she's not real comfortable with doctors because neither of them helped her mother or father survive. We both died young. Get me home. Get me home. Well, the cruise leaves in a few days. We put all this money, all this, and so 750-mile drive home, hardly even stopping. She's over there having these physical seizures one after another. What's that make me feel like? Helpless. Hey, I don't always walk in the spirit of sonship. And if I move into that sense of helplessness and I don't feel I have control, one of two things is going to happen. I'm either going to fall into just total dependency upon the Father, and if I do, then what's going to be a manifestation of that? Love, joy, peace, goodness, meekness, faith, self-control. I mean, I'm in the center of Father's love, and compassion, and mercy is going to flow out of me, and nurture is going to flow out of me, and the mother heart is going to take over, and I'm just going to be right there to nurture and care. That's not the pattern I grew up with. And so as soon as I couldn't help, I'm not as spiritual as y'all think. I don't know why you came from 11 states to this meeting. What did I do? I went back to Num Numville. I was not angry. I was not mad. I was not upset. I did not demean. I did not devalue. I'm just... It's the only way I could deal with disappointment and pain. And it's so spiritual because, see, I kind of follow a lot of the Christian mystics that talks about denying self. You know, Madame Guyon and Malinos, and I'm a direct descendant of Madame Guyon. They're my heroes. So when crisis comes, just go back into meditation, you know, and denying self. And I thought I was so spiritual all through December as my wife's going through all this battle, and we're going to doctor after doctor trying to find out what's going on, and it was turned out to be a gland shutdown. The hormones stop flowing, and the physical body goes into these what's called physical seizures. And she's doing much better now. And I thought I handled it so well, but my wife I couldn't understand what she was talking about. You're not there for me. I'm right here. I just couldn't understand where she... I've not done anything. You're so distant, you're not there. And then we go through a week of prophetic care, prayer counseling. My wife and I, every year or two, go in and submit ourselves to be ministered to. We have no right being here ministering to you if we're not on receiving end. And this one happened to be 5 days with the Kilstras of prophetic prayer counseling. And man, they nailed me the first day. You have the whole shame, fear, control stronghold, Jack. As soon as you feel helpless, you move right back into shutting your emotions down. And what happens? I've moved off center of Father's love. I can't be doing that. I am praying 4 to 5 hours a day instead of 6 weeks. I had the whole time off. I had nothing to do. I'm on sabbatical for 3 months. Man, I've been sitting in my study 4 or 5 hours a day just meditating on the Lord and just loving God. I can't... Have you noticed how we justify when someone gets a little too close to home? But as I looked at it, I began to realize that's exactly what I've done for 48 years. And it's so easy to be in the center of Father's love right here. And there's where compassion and nurture and that mother heart of Father will flow through us. even in moments when we feel helpless. But over here, where's our dependency? It's in this whole God dependency. And the only way to get there is you can't do it. The only way to come into this, tell me, does the little 4 or 5 year old boy, can he get to town on his own? I mean, can he fix dinner for himself? Can he do anything when he's sick? Total dependency at all times on God. That's the place he wants to get us to. But people like me that were survivors that learned independence, self-reliance, became so strong in will at sea, in so many days and years at sea, fighting off the storms, fighting off the elements, fighting off mates, crew members. You learn how good you are at doing things. And that's the hard place. For us to come into this dependency. What's it say in Matthew 18:3? Except we become as little children, we can't enter into the kingdom of God. This childlikeness, and what's one of the greatest qualities of a childlike innocence? Basic trust in the Father to meet the need. But see, the orphan spirits lost it. So the whole trust system is in themselves. And if they can't handle the pressure, num-num bill. They shut down the emotions and then operate completely out of the intellect. Oh, we could go for a lot further there. Let's go into what position do they feel. This position feels more like a slave to God, or you could put in their servant. And they focus themselves on being servants of God with hyper-religious activity. But this one is in the place of sons and daughters. Let's go a little bit further, because I don't want to spend all 2 hours here. I would like to finish up. What's the theology system based on here? Their theology, their focus is a love of law. This one's the law of love. So this one focuses on truth. This one focuses on compassion. What's the security system? I've got about 20 of these, so we're going to be here a while. But what's the security system? The one. One is insecure. No peace. No rest. Constantly striving. The other one, of course, lives a life of rest and peace. And as we shared yesterday morning, even though I had a responsibility to teach in front of my mentors and spiritual fathers and thousands of people sitting behind me ready for me to minister, and I know I can't help any of them. Oh, if you can help something, if you think you got the goods they need, where do you live? And if you realize I don't have the goods they need and there's not anything I can really do, you just found this at rest and peace. Let's go a little bit further. What about the whole need for approval? And realize approval, the need for approval, is a basic need within each side of us. It's this need for unconditional love and acceptance and affirmation. We all have a need for approval. But one person's approval is tied up in the praise of men. And see, in Isaiah 51, verse 12 and 13, which was my mission statement in life for so many years, the praise of men, he who fears man draws away from the living God. Any aspect of the fear of man in your life, you're drifting. You see, to really minister the Father's love, you cannot have a fear of losing your reputation. Because that's tied into the fear of man. But the other approval system is we're just to rest in the Father. Again, it keeps coming back. We know the Father is our approval system. And we learned last night, there is nothing you can do to cause God to love you any more than He loves you right now. There's nothing you can do to cause God to love you any less than He loves you right now. He loved the prodigal son out in the midst of the pit just as much as He loved the prodigal son when he came home, just as much as He loved before and left. Because if there's something you can do to cause God to love you any more than He loves you right now, guess where you live? Because Jesus plus anything equals nothing. Jesus plus anything you do, you take Jesus out of the picture. Now you've come back to the religions of the world and not to Christianity. It's all about what the Son has done, not about our performance. That's hard to believe, though, isn't it? But see, that's why I wanted to teach on the prodigal last night, so you could see what was the response of the father when the son failed. You know, just total love and acceptance. Let's go a little bit further. What about the motive behind our service? The motive behind the service, behind serving. This one's motivated by a need. The orphan is motivated by a need for personal achievement. We're going to stop writing now and just start reading them off. You're getting the hint of what we're doing right now. The motive for service. The orphan is motivated by a need for personal achievement, which leads to a fear of failure in God's eyes and a fear of failure even in man's eyes. Sonship is motivated by love perceived service. You know who the greatest servants you are within any body that you have, within any church that's represented here? Your spiritual orphans. They will burn themselves out. They will sacrifice their family. They'll sacrifice their time, their energy. I mean, they're pouring themselves out. And we think it's great, but you're going to lose them before long. A few years down the line, you're going to lose them. Because if you ever stop saying the right thing, or if you have a bad hair day, they respond in offense and they're gone. Of a spiritual orphan. But see, a person who's overwhelmed with Father's love and at rest in the spirit of sonship, I can't wait to just pour the Father's love into the next person I meet. Where can I serve? What can I do? How can I lay my life down? And it's not based upon you patting me on the back. It's not based upon you saying the right things. You've got teenagers. You know you're not going to get very many crumbs from their table. Yet you continue to provide. You continue to serve. You see, but it's because of the love that you have that even though they may be in rebellion against you, oh, it hurts and it breaks your heart, but you still love them. You still love them. Let's go on to another contrast. What's your motive behind Christian disciplines? And when I say Christian disciplines, your prayer life, the study of the Word, fasting, giving, study, the Christian disciplines that may be in your life. For one, it's a duty and a burden. And man, I got to get up and read 3 chapters in the Bible again today. And we try, we make a commitment January 1st to read the Bible through in a year, and we get our little prayer guide, the Bible through in a year, and we make it about 2 to 3 weeks, and then we miss a few days and we get so far behind, I'll never catch up. And then, oh, holy God, oh, sinful me, what a terrible Christian I am. I can't even do this right. It becomes a heavy, heavy load and burden. We saw that Sunday morning with Paul, Graham's son, just stacking all of the burden upon him. But when you have the spirit of sonship, the disciplines become a joy. Not all of them are a joy. Fasting. I hadn't got there yet. I mean, it's not a joy for about 5 days. Once you get through all the turmoil and the pain, then it's fun. You get in the zone. And if you've never been there in the 5 days, I mean, when you move past all the pain, you move past the potato chips in the cabinet talking to you. I mean, if you don't know how to get there, we've got a tape series on that that'll get you there. And that's the pulling down strongholds through prayer and fasting. It'll make it fun if you survive the first 5 days. But it's a pleasure and delight. I mean, it's a pleasure to just spend time with the Lord. It's a pleasure to be in the Word. It's not a matter of how much. It's just knowing these are Dad's words to me. Fasting may get there sometime, but motive for holiness. Contrast. Motive for purity in your life. Holiness, righteousness in your life. The orphan must be holy. Therefore, he's driven by ever-increasing guilt, consciousness, and shame. Because if he's not holy, he's deserving of punishment, judgment. The son wants to be holy. Big difference in must. Romans 5:7-5. The law arouses the sinful passions of the flesh. You know who the most people that we minister to that are in immoral relationships, the most category of ministers we minister to? Holiness pastors. because they must be holy, and it arouses all the sinful passions of the flesh. You know, the highest divorce rate in the country, what region has the highest divorce rate in the country? This region is 50% higher than any other region in the nation. The Bible Belt. Because they must be holy, and it arouses all the sinful passions of the flesh. But when we come into this place of sonship, we just want to be holy, because once you experience the Father's love, I don't want to do anything to hinder being on center in His love. I don't want to do anything to drift. It hurts too much out here. And it's too much fun on center. I mean, it's like being a little kid again and just having fun in everything you're doing, and walking with God's not work. It's just a little boy with his daddy. But see, most of us, like Jack Winter says, most of us are great big boys with little bitty daddies. And it's time for us to be a little bitty boy with a great big daddy. That's sonship. What's the image of ourself? Contrast. The orphan constantly compares himself to others. Compares his ministry, compares his place in the body, compares his place in the social economic structure of his community, compares himself to the Joneses. Constantly comparing. And soon as you start thinking, comparing yourself to someone else, you start thinking they're more blessed than you are. And it's actually a form of self-judgment, self-rejection, self-condemnation. As soon as you compare your ministry to someone else, you're about to hurt somebody. You first, your family when you get home. But the contrast? How do you see yourself? Fully loved and accepted as I am. I mean, I feel so good about myself. I am just totally at rest in Dad's love. I just know I'm his little boy. And I can have a month like December when I'm really out there in the orphan spirit, but I know where Father's at during that time. He's not sitting back there, "When are you going to get your act right, Jack?" He's sitting there, "Come on, Jack. Let's just have a good love in. Just turn around. Just open your heart up again. Get out of that little independence you're in and that num-numville you're in, and just come on back to the Father." And I was spending 4 or 5 hours a day resting in Him, but I was really resting in the independence and self-reliance and not in His love, or out of a nurturing to my wife in the time of need. Boy, that was a big breakthrough in January when we got that one. Let's go a little bit further contrast. Have you found yourself yet? Oh, woe is me. What about our comfort system? The orphan's comfort system is what? Counterfeit affections, which is the 4 P's of possessions, passions, power is the 4th one, but position. Security system in possessions, their love relationship in passions, their need for affirmation in position, the praise of man. And then their destiny, their purpose in life, gaining control, power over their own life instead of living to receive His love and give it to the next person I meet. So the comfort system, counterfeit affections, the comfort system, just again, just at rest in the comforting arms of the Father, just totally at rest there. Let's go on to another one. Contrast. What about our relationship with others? Let's contrast the orphan spirit with the spirit of sonship and how we relate to others. If you have an orphan spirit, you have all these thoughts of competition and rivalry and jealousy. Back again to self-comparison. You begin to think others are more blessed than you, others are more successful than you, God's promoting others above you, God's blessing others' ministry, the church is promoting others above you, and it's this constant relationship of competition, rivalry, jealousy. But if you're in the center of sonship, then there is unity and humility. Again, back to where we started with that illustration of that other ministry really attacking me. And the whole time he's attacking me, I'm sitting there thinking, I wasn't upset or angry the whole time. The poor guy. I lived here for 45 years. I know the pain this guy must live through. I know the pain of him sitting there seeing me far less educated, far less experienced, much fewer years in ministry than him. And it's just eating him up inside out that God's blessed me, blessed Shiloh Place, and his hasn't gotten off the ground yet. And it's just tearing them to pieces. Been there, done that. Hell on earth is pastors' meetings. Because you're constantly comparing how they seem to be more blessed than you. Well, ask his kids if they really are. Over there. Sonship, this humility and unity, you value others. Value others. You're able to rejoice with others' successes, grieving with them over their failures. And if this is issues in your life and you're in any ministry role of ministry or leadership, you need the Avoiding Pitfalls for Leaders. It's three tape series, 90-minute tape series that goes through all of these issues of striving and competition and rivalry and how it splits churches. And it's a real funny one. The first two tapes are just, I mean, you'll be laughing one minute and crying the next as your heart's being cut out. Okay, let's contrast. How do we handle other people's faults? The orphan, exposure and accusation. Remember 1 Peter 4:8, love covers. Love covers. Love covers. Because I happened to be on a good day and I happened to be at that minister's meeting when I was walking in the spirit of sonship and the attack comes, love covers. Love covers. Love covers. Humility. Unity. Valuing. If I was not in center of God's love that day and the attack comes, exposure. Telling everybody about it. Exposing it. Mentioning the name to others. Accusation. What is the spiritual condition? Contrast their spiritual conditions. The spiritual condition of the orphan, bondage and oppression. Constantly oppressed by this thought life and the competition and the comparisons and the rivalries and the accusations and the exposure. What's the spiritual condition of a spirit of sonship? Just liberty. It is fun. It is fun. It's worth the pain to get there. It's worth allowing all this hidden core pain coming to the surface. And it's not over because it surfaced once. I mean, blasted in the Father's love the last 5 years. But December and January, all the hidden core pain surfacing again in my life. Now, I'll get 3 or 4, 5 or 6 months rest, and I'll just be a little boy just having a great time just playing with the Father. But I know there's another season coming down the road. When Father says, okay, you're ready for a little bit more hidden core pain to surface. If you wonder about hidden core pain, the teaching in that is the prayer ministry of the Father's love. It's all about that. It is a series that prepared the altar workers here, those with a blue badge. It has a manual. If you have a ministry or you have a church or leadership, you'll want this to help train you of how to minister to others the Father's love. It gets into helping identify hidden core pain and how it all comes to the surface. It's called the prayer ministry of the Father's love, about 5 hours teaching on that. What about the sense of God's presence? Let's contrast the orphan spirit with sonship. How about the presence of God? One lives in a distant country. One is distant. The other, close and intimate. Luke 15:31, my child, I am always with you, and all that I have is yours. I know no matter how much of a bad hair day I'm having, Father's right here. He's never left me. Hebrews 13:5, I'll never leave you nor forsake you. He's right here. I've just got off center that day, and all it takes, I don't have a long journey to get home. All I have to do is turn from looking towards the distant country to right here. And Dad's right there immediately, just like that. Just like that, he's right there. It's me that turns my back off center sometimes. And it happens often, yes. But remember the goal we said yesterday, 51% or more in the center of Father's love, and you're an overcomer. And life starts being fun. And it's no longer a struggle and a heavy thing. What about how we express love to others, especially to family, immediate family members? What about our expression of love? Let's contrast that. The orphan spirit's love is conditional. It's based upon whether they are living up to your expectations and your definition of what they should be as a spouse or as a child or as a parent. It's conditional. It's guarded. It's based on others' performance. And you seek to get your own love need met over meeting their love needs. That's the orphan spirit. Now, I know that's nobody in this room here. You hadn't got there yet. But the spirit of sonship, your love is patient. Your love's affectionate. It's gentle. You're laying your own personal life and agendas down for others. You're not all wrapped up in the business being the driving force of your life, your ministry the driving force of your life, and your wife or your spouse and children just getting the leftovers. I mean, everything you do is geared around how can I determine and set the priorities and set my time in order so that I can be a blessing to my children, to my family, and meet the needs they have. Now, we've set out with Shiloh Place. It took us about 9 years to get this area in order to where they know, in spite of me having to travel 10 days. You know how we set it in order? My wife and children set my calendar. You see, 8 years, I just went. Oh, that looks like a great, fun thing to do. I'll go there. I'll go there. And then when I come home, I've got mad wife and kids. And now they set my calendar, and if I'm too busy 1 month, hey, I didn't make my calendar. You made my calendar. Can't blame me. But see, it's changed where before I wanted to go to the world and win the world, but once you come into sonship, no, I want to win my family first. And when that changed, the whole anointing changed, and we went from a small place to the nations now have our materials. But that had to change for me. But it was I thought I had to make it happen. What did John say last night? As long as he tried to build a ministry, man, he was getting more and more depressed, more and more down. And when he just resigned from ministry 3 years ago and he quit trying to make it happen and he just said, I'm just going to be a little boy with a great big daddy. Now people flock to him for ministry. But see, the orphan thinks they've got to make it happen. Doesn't happen that way. When we go through this type of meeting, we begin to see the pain and the damage that we've done to our children. And there's a tape we do on healing the heart of the children. Healing the heart of the children. It is tape 4 from You Are Created for Love. And it's the process. It is about a 12-point outline, very detailed, line by line, just a simple, simple teaching that is all about how you can create a healing event for your children, whether they're 5 years old or whether they're 50 years old. We give illustrations, we go through this, how you can bring healing and restoration to your children and your children's heart restored to you. And I would recommend, that tape has just gone all over the world. The Call got a hold of it, I understand. They had us sign papers of releasing it, The Call, the big youth event in Washington, D.C. And I understand they used the outline in their materials that were handed out free. They used that very outline. I've never seen the outline, but I know we signed papers releasing it. But it's healing the heart of the children. And if you don't want to buy the whole series, you can call our ministry and order the single tape, Healing the Heart of Your Children, and it'll tell you how to do this. You do need to know it will cost you one of the deepest acts of humility you have ever gone through to do this. How much do you want your child's heart restored? But it has worked with non-Christian children as well as Christian children to be restored to their parents.